Okay, so I'm recording this meeting, and if you object to being recorded, you can just stay silent or leave. So today is we're going to be giving Julio is going to be giving a demo of the ANEI runtime browser called Sparky. This is May 15th at the use case realization call. We'll just start with that so that he has enough time and runway to do his presentation. Julie, you want to share?
Sure. Sounds good. I can do that. Just so it context of time, how much time do I
have?
You
can have the entire meeting. We have a lot of other topics, but
okay.
Go ahead and take as much time as you need.
Okay. Yeah, I don't plan to use up the entire meeting. I assume you mean the hour, but probably maybe 15 to 20 minutes.
Sure, however long you need.
Something to that effect.
That's fine.
Okay, sounds good. So I'll start with sharing my screen. Good day, everyone. This one here. Let me know when it has come up.
Yeah, we can see it.
Perfect. Okay. So this is the ANDI UI, or otherwise known as Sparky. That's the internal or the name that given to one of several set of microservices that comprise of the ANDI UI as a whole. What we're looking at here is the front end, and when you first fire up the UI within ONAP, you actually access the UI through an ONAP portal. In this particular setup that I have here, this is it's a setup that's within the Amdocs environment. I work for Amdocs, and this is our ANDI UI within the Amdocs environment. But what it is it's using the base of the ANDI UI from ONAP, and then there may be some things that have been layered on top of it. And part of that is, it's a good demonstration also to show the fact that the UI is also extensible. So there is a base layer, but you can also extend it to add additional functionality. I'm not going to get into that additional functionality that's in this particular environment, but effectively it is just to introduce the fact that it is extensible. So from a base perspective, in terms of what is offered within ONAP, what you get is mainly a search bar, or what we call here is the view and inspect screen. So when you first log on to the UI, you're kind of presented with a blank screen here, and the intention is that sort of like a Google interaction, where when you go to the Google page, you're given the search bar, and the intent is that the user will now can interact with the UI in terms of starting to search for services or resources. So, for example, there's a service called Halifax in here, and when I click and when I start to type it, I automatically start to get some suggestions, very much like Google. So it gives me some suggestions in terms of things that are called Halifax within the system. So for example, there's a view server called Halifax, Halifax Bank Zero. There's a service instance called Halifax Bank Zero, and so on. So if I were to click on, let's say, the service, you got a little spinny thing. And what it's doing is you're searching for that service that has been created. Now, this is a very large service, so maybe this was not the best example to use, but it gives you an idea as to how complex a service can be. So basically what this is showing us here is that there's a service called Halifax, and it's showing us all the various dependencies that are hanging off this service, all the various resources from physical information to virtual information. I think what I'll do is actually maybe show something that's not as complex. So let's try this one here. So here, this one's not as complicated. So here I searched for a vServer that is called Halifax Bank, and it's showing me the various relationships that are associated with this vServer. So it has some L interfaces, it's associated to a tenant, and so on. On the right side of the panel for this particular vServer, there's a list of attributes that are associated to that to this particular object, and each of those attributes has a series of values that are associated with it. And as I click around on these objects, this right side panel changes to show additional information or information that's specific to that object. So in ANDI, when services and resources are being populated into ANDI, there's a relationship between, let's say, a service and its associated resources. And this relationship is captured kind of as a graph within ANDI. And the UI here is now visualized. And so when I search for that, when I recall that service within the UI, the UI is rendering that graph as a set of objects that are related to one another. And then I can navigate around that graph to look at particular things that I may be interested in terms of information. So looking at this vServer, I know that it's part of this tenant, which is, I guess it's the site that this tenant belongs to is in London, and there's characteristics or attributes associated with that tenant. If anyone has any questions, please stop me as I'm going. Otherwise, I'll just continue moving on. But yes, feel free to interrupt us if you have.
Can you question. Say something about the little icons? The green looks like a check, maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
Blue dot, exclamation point.
Sure. So that's this is functionality that is not available in the base ONAP solution or the base ONAP in the IUI. But basically, what this is adding, this is something that Amdocs has added on top. That's is available to as part of the Amdocs ANDI offering. So what this is providing here is some information around validity or some data integrity checks that have been made against this object. So ANDI, so within the Amdocs ANDI, for example, there's some value add functionality that we've built that can validate whether an object conforms to a certain set of rules. Does it have all the minimum set of attributes that have do the attributes conform to specific values in terms of, you know, does it have the right value, or there's some values associated to an object that it's not expecting? So there are things like that you can build into the system, make the system extensible, and then be able to use, extend the UI in order to leverage some additional capabilities that are offered by the ANDI system. So here in this example here, we've augmented the UI to show that, you know, there's some validation. So for example, this object here has been validated, but this object here has also been validated, but there's a little red exclamation. So there's something within this object that has... that is not quite right or has been flagged as an issue. So that may appear in some logs somewhere within the system. So that's the intent of these little icons. But again, that's not something that's available in ONAP, so I just wanted to sort of highlight that there is a distinction here. Really, the base within ONAP, we do have this graph capability showing the relationships, but these little icons are something above and beyond what's available in ONAP at the moment.
So is that icon supposed to represent the state of that VNF or the object, or?
No, it represents a data integrity feature that Amdocs has created.
Okay.
Yeah, it's part of an Amdocs ANDI offering.
So you're saying that's kind of like a proprietary installation of ONAP that
it is.
It's not a, yeah, unfortunately, it's not a source or a thing.
Yeah, unfortunately, given the, so I just found out about this demo just yesterday. So unfortunately, we didn't have an opportunity to set up an ONAP environment to show the ONAP specific UI. So yeah, so you're getting a I guess an ONAP plus sort of demo today.
I see. And is the blue dot, dot, dot and gray exclamation point meaningful to this as well? Or?
Yeah, well, this is basically showing details. So again, some additions to on top of what's available in the ONAP and the IUI. Clicking on this button shows some additional Amdocs specific functionality. But by default, I have Francis here on the phone with me. He was one of the main leads for the ANDI UI. Francis, I don't recall if the ellipse here shows up by default on ONAP, or if that only comes up if we
have additional. Yes, the dot, dot, dot shows up. The other one is related to data integrity, so it will not show up in ONAP.
Okay, so yeah, we do have this. So this is not available in ONAP.
The idea is that with extensions, you could add more to the dial, so you could add your own icons. We could have 5-6 icons if we needed to. And the fact to be able to add those icons, to add extensions, is a possibility in ONAP.
Absolutely. Yeah, in fact, actually, I think there recently AT&T has contributed some additional visualizations or reports or interfaces on top of the base ANDI UI as well. I believe that made it into ONAP After Friends. I don't know if you you can confirm or deny that, but I know there was, I think there was an intent to do that. I'm not sure.
Yes, there's still an intent, but it's not in ONAP yet.
Okay. So there may be other. There's a possibility for other contributors to continue to add additional functionality within the UI. Today, within the ANDI UI in ONAP, there's two basic views. There's this graph view, as we showed here, that you can interact with via the search bar. Another view that we get is something called VNFs, which is basically, it's a report of all the VNFs that have been created within the ANDI system. And what it provides us today is four bar charts, based on a different attributes that are modeled within against the VNF. So, for example, there are some VNFs here, but you can get a, or in terms of, first of all, before we even look at the charts, there's a counter to indicate how many VNFs are currently within the ANDI. So 2,500 in this particular case. And then you can start to get a breakdown of different types of VNFs based on these bar charts. So by provision status here, for example, you can see that there's about almost 700 VNFs that are have a provision status of PROV, and then another 320 some that are NVT PROV, and so on. And then there's also, you can get a view as to how many VNFs are in certain orchestration statuses. So for example, there's over 1,000 are active. There's 151 that are non-orchestrated. There's almost 194 specifically that are in deleted states, and so on. And then you can also get a view as to the actual network function type. So what are these VNFs? What roles are they playing within? What functional roles, types, and roles are they playing within the ANDI system? So, for example, here we have several routers. We have several DNSs, NATs, and EMS, and so on. And also based on their roles. So firewalls and so on. So you can get a view. The report here, you can provide. You can get a view as to the VNFs are within the system, and also just a breakdown of those VNFs. So these are the two basic views that the ONAP ANDI UI provides. And as Francis and I have said, that there is a capability to be able to extend the ANDI UI, providing some additional views. So for example, if an operator was interested in the ANDI UI and they wanted some specific visualizations that are pertinent to their environment, there is the capability to build some custom visualizations or some custom reports that pertain specifically to that customer.
And can anybody do that, or is there a load? Is that an open source? Is that a special?
Francis, correct me if I'm wrong. I know there's, I think there is some basic reporting capabilities that I think was added to ONAP. If not the reporting, but at least some, it's easy to extend the existing visualizations or create your own visualizations.
Yeah, there is a small ramp up to understand how to add extensions, but once this is done, anything could be done.
Yes, sir.
And I'm pretty sure we have the documentation in ONAP. If not, it should be. So if not, we can add it because we have it.
Okay, you read my mind. I was just about to ask, is there some documentation to read the docs or something about that?
When the AT&T folks wanted to add their own stuff, we helped them a lot, and we updated our documentation.
Yeah.
I can't remember if we put it in ONAP, but if it is not, it should be in ONAP. So if it's not, I'll do a check today and see if what we have there is the latest.
One of the things I wanted to also show in terms of a capability, Francis, I believe this is basic functionality, the filter. I don't think this is anything that's
no, you can show it. This is
it's not an Amdocs add-on here. Yeah.
No.
So you can do some filtering. So if you want, so right now we're looking at all the VNFs that are currently in ANDI, but you can start to toggle things. So for example, you can, there's based on each of these bar charts has a filter has a filter capability associated with it. So for example, if I wanted to filter on the orchestration status bar chart here, and I only wanted to look at, let's say, the non-orchestrated, or let's say the active. Active is always looking more interesting, I think. So we can click on the active, and then what happens here is you can see all the bar charts dynamically updates to show that all the VNFs, so the VNF counts have reduced from 2,500 to about 1,000. So we can see here on the orchestration status specifically, this is set to active, so we only see the active bar chart. But the other bar charts have also changed. So for example, here, this is sort of the subset of VNFs that are in active state and also have a provision status set to prov, NVT prov, and then the remaining two bar charts here, these have also been updated to indicate which active VNFs are type of DNS and routers and so on. So, and you can set multiple of these. So I can come in here and I can then set, let's say, for example, NVT prov, and there's further reduction or further the bar charts further minimized to show the VNFs that are currently in these various states or types or rules. So we can start to manipulate some of these filters to start to drill down to look at some very specific information. So yeah, so you can set any number of these filters. At this time, these are single select filters. You cannot select multiple values. So that is possibly a future enhancement that can be done to the UI. But at this moment in time, it's they're single select values. And then you can clear these filters and to reset the charts and back to the original states.
Isn't there sort of a conceptual overlap between the function type and function role? How does that work?
I think there is. Yeah. So this was something I believe these were specific attributes that were added by AT&T. There does feel like there is a bit of an overlap. I think if we were to dig into the actual model file that describes these, there, I think there may be some more specific definitions around, you know, the difference between a functional type, function type, and a function role. But I would agree with you, there is a little bit of overlap that can be interpreted from this. But I think there is. I think the VNF standards do differentiate between a function type and a function role.
So I guess I was leading to if you filter on those, is how does that work if you're filtering on like a NAT, they both have VNAT, I think.
Yeah. So there was a VNAT, and then there was a NAT itself. So yeah. So we would see. And they're both the same. So that seems to be consistent. I would 272 and 272. So it's based on how the orchestration system has the data.
Yeah, this one the AI. It's mostly canned data that I created a few months back. So this is not an orchestrator doing a real thing. Adding VNFs with some data in it.
I see.
Just to so that we can show that screen and have something that looks good.
Yeah, so the reality is, I think, we may not see values that are so closely related across these two tables or these two bar charts. But yeah, it's just some canned data. That is the extent of, I think that's the two main pieces of functionality. Francis, can you think of anything else that would be interesting to show that are this
app? To show, not really, but the thing is that the search bar is mostly driven from the OXM file. We have annotations. If anybody introduces a new entity, there's just one or two entries to add to the OXM and then redeploy this OXM file in AI. And when things get added, they will be searchable right away. So to add new searchable entities is there's no code change really. It's only OXM annotations.
And there's multiple ways you can interact with the search bar. So there's a hamburger menu where you can get to views, or you can even start typing in things. For example, VNFs. I can look at let's say from the search bar, I can click on active VNFs, and that should have taken me to the VNS reports. But it looks like in this particular instance of the ANDI UI, maybe that's not working. Try to go back to the paragraph view here. Aha! And we have broken it. So good. Something has gone wrong.
Just bring it into a new tab.
So let's do this. Well, a new tab or a new browser, Francis?
Just a new tab should be sufficient.
So I'm going to blame the Amdocs implementation, not the ONAP implementation here, but let's see if we're brave enough to try that again.
Can I ask the lines between the nodes, is that only based on the sub-object containment in the OXM files? Is it also showing relationship lists, edge rules?
It's only the relationship that are in the in AAI itself. So, the relationship entity within the entity. So right now we don't show anything about the type of edge rules or the type of edge that you have.
Let me bring up that example again. So vServer, I think it was this one that we used.
So all the lines that you see is that somebody created a pServer, created a vServer, and created a relationship between the two, using the DBEdge rules to create a relationship, but we don't have any attributes or anything on the line to say which type of relation we're using.
Okay.
But all the lines that you see is because somebody hooked up two entities together.
Maybe what we can do now is just quickly have a...
So let me add to that or probe that a little bit more. So are you saying that there were like this vServer and iInterface, is that iInterface or pServer and tenant in London? Those were all manually... in like the, there was a service like in the design tool or something, SDC, somebody specified these two things are related, or when they, I assume these are all instantiations of things, right?
They are all instantiation of things. The view and inspect is find stuff that the orchestrator would have created. So a vServer got created. Here's the instance. The pServer got created. It's not that about the model. It's about really instances that got created.
Yeah, right. So the question I was asking before, so if you look at the PNF, PNF to P interface is a sub-object containment,
yes,
but PNF to complex is a relationship list.
Yes.
So you draw.
For us, we did not differentiate between the two of them. Really, we have a relation between that PNF and that P interface. Whether it's a real relationship or if it is a complex structure, we are displaying the two the same way.
Yeah, fair enough.
And the how,
oh, and Ben,
and is there a way to tell between the two, or do you click on the node and can you tell, or
can you click on the line?
Can you repeat your question? You cannot click on the line. And
yeah,
the only thing that could give you a help is that if you click on the P interface, Julio, you'll see the URI. No, your eye only starts with the P interface.
And the URI is the unique identifier for that specific instance of that object, right?
Yeah, but if you click on the vServer, I
that
checked
like
those
a bit
before.
Shortened.
Yeah.
Because in this one, you'll see that it's part of a cloud infrastructure of the tenant. So you can recreate where it's coming from, usually. I don't know why the P interfaces, maybe because they are substructures, we're losing that information. But when it is a relationship, you'll see the full link of the URI.
Yeah, but in that vServer, that self link is an attribute that's filled by the user. And so the URI and that one is also a short name, not a full
yeah,
path.
Yeah.
And not everything has a self link. Many things do, but not everything.
No, I know.
So I think I had a similar comment to what Pavel was showing with graph. You know, there's a graph. Obviously, some of them are containment that belongs to, and some of them are different types of relationships. It would be quite useful, I think, to have a label on there to see if it's a belongs to or bridges to or links to or something else.
Yeah, no, that's some valid feedback. Yep. Francis, is there anything around maybe some of the technologies that we want to speak to? Use of Elasticsearch, for example, or anything interesting that you can think of around?
Only if you guys are interested to know how we came up with the data to be able to do that, but. Just that it uses multiple microservices to be able to make use of the UI. But yeah, that would be in the nitty-gritty details.
Right. Yeah. So it does make use of Elasticsearch. That's the search engine that that ANDI relies on, or the ANDI UI relies on, in order to for the graph the search bar interaction in order to find. Elements of interest or objects of interest. So as data is populated into ANDI, things that are marked in terms of searchable via the model distributed from SDC, objects that are marked as searchable in the ANDI will inject those objects into the Elasticsearch so that they're searchable via the UI.
Yeah, we are near real time. So if anything gets added to resources in Cassandra, resources is sending an event on DMAP, and we have the data router microservice that gets it and puts it in Elastic. So within just a few seconds, you're able to search on something that was just added
or updated or deleted.
Question about the attributes that are displayed on the side there. Is that configured in the OXM file or in somewhere else? Because I was just looking at that P interface. There's other attributes in AAI which are not shown in that.
We are only showing the attributes and the stuff that are populated. So it's just that we happen to populate only these attributes.
So I guess these would be the required attributes defined for the model, as opposed to, I guess, optional attributes are not here.
Right, but it will automatically show all the attributes. So if you put other values in, that appear here automatically.
Yes, exactly. We take everything that... We do a get in resources, and we display everything that we get from that request.
So I had a question: the relationship of where the circles are and how you show things. There's no way to move those, right? I mean, it's kind of fixed based on the predetermined relationship of where those things are to other things, and it doesn't necessarily center on something you click on. Like I noticed when you click on P interface in the upper right, it still stays kind of in the upper right, because I guess you originally searched on vServer, which it's sort of in the center.
Centered, yeah.
But you can pan, you can move everything.
Yeah.
You have full control.
Yeah. Oh, you can move
Server. Mm-hmm. Yeah, by default, it's doing a force-directed graph. So all we'll try to center on the node you searched on, and everything will try to push all the other nodes so that it fits as much as possible on the screen. But the more nodes you have, the more complex this becomes.
Sure, yeah.
But after that, you can pan, you can zoom, you can move.
Right. So I think by default, so right now we're seeing, so we searched on, where did it go here? We searched on this object here, vServer.
Right.
And we're seeing quite an extensive number of relationships. So several layers deep. So like one, two, three, four layers deep, for example. I think in ONAP by default, I think we only see, I think up to two layers deep. So we'd see vServer tenant and let's say cloud region.
Yeah.
But this is configurable. So in this particular environment, we've configured it to go much deeper in terms of the graph. But there is some control that you can have in terms of how deep you want to go. The deeper you go, the more, the slower in terms of response time, maybe the graph will get served up, especially if it's a very large graph. So there's a bit of a balance that you need to play with there.
But this is queried from the Elasticsearch database at this point, right? It's not coming from AI resources.
We take from Elastic just information for the search. So when you search on something, we give you suggestions. When you click on one, that suggestions has the URI to hit to go to resources. Once we get that one, then we continue to hit resources to get the rest of the graph. So we have something that says how deep we want to go. If we go to, let's say, a cloud region, we know a cloud region will open up so many things. We have filters that say, if you get to a cloud region and that don't get all its children, we want to stop there. We don't want to see everything else. Same thing for a complex. You would have a lot of P servers associated to a complex. So if you're not searching for the complex, you probably don't, you're not interested in all the P servers. So you stop your search, your stop traversing at that complex. So we have a few rules like that to try to make the graph better. And all those rules are configurable as well. If somebody has different requirements, they can play with those rules in the Sparky config.
So is this only using the resources API or is it using the traversal custom query as well?
We are using to do the to find the graph once you selected something. It is only using resources. We also have a way to sync that is configurable, but usually it's once a day, and this one is using traversal. It will be give me all the P servers, give me all the complex, just to make sure that Elastic has all the information to be able to get back to the link.
Yep, okay.
When you say configurable, you want to show us that? Is that like just a screen or is it a file?
It's files in Helm right now.
You deploy.
It's when you deploy. They may be, I'm pretty sure that right now most of them are kind of hidden, but they can be put back in Helm so that the config can be fine-tuned for people. We tried to keep it right now with defaults that would be good for a lot of people, and we can always have discussions to change the defaults if they don't make sense.
So can you see these configurations or do you have to open up the Helm chart? Is it?
That's the thing. I don't know if they are in the Helm chart, all of them. Let me just go. Where would I have that?
While Francis is looking that up, are there any other questions in terms of the visualizations? Actually, just to finish the, actually, one thing that Francis was saying, I think what he was getting at was, so there's a combination when we're serving up these visualizations, there's a combination of interaction between the Elasticsearch engine for the search suggestions, and then once you actually have selected a suggestion, there's then a further interaction that happens with the backend database, so Cassandra, to pull the various objects and all their associated attributes from the database in order to display the attributes and the relationships.
So, yeah, I know I've been working on some of the PNF stuff and use cases. I noticed this is sort of VNF centric. So, but you said this is a lot of just sort of canned data as well, right? So, but there's some PNFs here as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that other view you showed with the VNFs deployed, is there also something for like PNFs too, or?
At the moment there isn't, but I think that's something, so based on our extensibility framework that's within the UI, I think that's something that can be added with some amount of effort, but as Francis mentioned, there should be some documentation somewhere to help with that. But I mean, yeah, there is the, that's the intent. The intent is that you can build additional visualizations and add it onto the base core of the ANDI UI. So if PNFs was something of interest, that is a report or a visualization that you could build.
Yeah, because you know the ONAP in the first couple of releases started with VNFs. So obviously you've structured everything around VNFs, which is fine. But and then now as we're working in R3 and R4 and now into R6 use cases, you know, PNFs are gaining prominence, and there's a number of use cases where they're trying to orchestrate and deploy and work with PNFs. So and a number of people on the call are also have been engaged in a lot of the PNF use cases as well. So that would be interesting. So that's something that somebody can essentially build, you're saying?
I think so. I think with some effort and clearly with the documentation in hand, which I think Francis said he'll check on, make sure that didn't make it into ONAP. I think there is the ability to be able to extend the UI and add additional, you know, PNF specific information to the UI.
I have the config if you guys want to see it.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead, take control, Francis.
You need to stop sharing first.
Okay. Okay, it stopped.
So most of that config, we only have it in default right now. So really it is in Garrett, in the Sparky ONAP application, back in the ONAP application config. We have Spring Beans. And which one would be the best? This guy. Nope. There's one where we have all our rules. It's been a while since I looked at those.
So Kyung asked, is there any plans to make the configuration, there's some sort of UI you can see or change configurations?
I think the question there is any plans to make a UI for configuration? Oh, it's to actually, So instead of driving configuration via configuration files, actually do it through the UI itself. I think that's the crux of the question.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know internally we have talked about that. That is, I guess, the sort of long-term roadmap-y kind of view in terms of being able to make the UI more configurable, is to have a UI for the configuration. But it's not something that's concretely planned at this time.
Okay, I just cannot find it. I know it's one of those. On the Elasticsearch. It has to be here. Would have been better if I had it on my being able to do a grep, but I just changed computers, so sorry about that. This guy.
So there was also a question about the security UI. When you deploy this, is it then just accessed by any browser? Do you have to have some special app? How do you, that initial okay. sort of page you showed us?
So right now I am, because I'm not in, this is a demo on the side, I'm not hooked up to a portal, but in ONAP we are hooked up with the ONAP portal, so you need to go through the portal to access the UI, and all the security is with the portal with AAF to be able to see the UI.
I see.
And it's too bad. I really wanted to have a setup that where we would start with the portal and then get into it, but I could not do that in the time frame I had.
So all of these are, we're looking at all configuration stuff related to...
They're all kind of fine-tuning all over the place. We try to keep that outside of the application. Because, for example, the Sparky will be talking to a bunch of other microservices, and it has small little things to control all kind of stuff, like the sync. We are synchronizing multiple things, so you could configure them all. So by default, people would not change those, but we expose them so that if they need to be tweaked, they could. They're not exposed to Helm, because that would be way too many config to expose to Helm. So in the case of Helm, we went with the smallest possible, easy to configure section. And then if somebody needs, they would need other files, they would need to bring the config in Helm. But we did not expose everything at this time.
I see. So you're saying one of these files or somewhere within these files is where you configure the actual Sparky viewer.
So there are multiple things. If you want to say that you want to stop at a depth of 2 or a depth of 5, this isn't one of the files. In the same file, I'm pretty sure this is where you filter. I'm going to complex. If that's not what I'm searching for, stop there. So we kind of stop our traversals and stuff like that. And there are even items that we don't even want to get into.
I see.
But all of that is configurable. I can email probably to the group or something the file when I find it.
Yeah, that's fine.
Going on the browser is not the best way for me.
Yeah, okay.
But we added it somewhere because that's all configurable.
Yeah, I think we kind of get the idea.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Any other questions from anybody? I think this is great to see. All right, let me share again. And I know a number of people emailed me that they weren't able to make it, but would like to listen to a recording. So I took some screenshots as you were presenting, and you know, you can look at it if you want to use it later on as well. And other people can download and take a look at the at the demo. Okay, thanks, Giulio, and
you're very welcome
For the demo. That'll also be, yeah, we have a table of running presentations as well. So I'll add you to the slides and link will be today. Next week we have Ramki will be talking about edge automation. That should be interesting as well. So we'll, in the last 10 minutes or so, we'll go over some of our standing topics. One of them was Ala wanted us to go through our use cases. And I think Vimal was on that call as well, where we were going through our use cases and adding sort of a business driver reason for the use cases, which I started to do in some of our some of the use cases. So notably the ones that I was heavily working on or most heavily involved with, like onboarding and pre-onboarding, for example, to get a kind of common look and feel. And if this is the R6 page, I added them to the base page. This is the business driver section here. So Vimal, we should probably talk about this on Thursday, I guess, is a topic as well. It would be nice that all the 5G use cases at least sort of had a sort of same view, or we can go to each one as well as and talk about them. But I kind of added them on certain ones just so other people could fill them out. I think I added some netconf. Let's see, plug and play. Plug and play, I was working on that, so I had added that in as well. And yeah, so you can see for plug and play, and the business drivers here, and then oops, I went to the wrong page there. So anyway, for all the 5G use cases, you probably go through, and just all the use cases, I think Ala was asking in general. Of course, I'm most closely tied to the 5G use cases. Last time, at last meeting, we spoke about the FMPM metadata, that maybe they could share bulk PM and PM could share a common business driver.
Did she give any target date for completing this work?
I don't think so.
Let's ourselves, and for 5G at least, let's put a date and identify the owner. If there are more than one, that's fine. But on Thursday we can do that.
That sounds good. Yeah. Okay. So that's anyway a topic that affects all of, you know, a lot of our use cases. Let me see, where are we here? Okay. Okay, so just so people are aware, if you're working use case, you know, you can copy the sort of template from the pre-onboarding and boarding page, or from the plug and play where we have done those. We did that as a group last time. And, you know, cut and paste the at least the headers. There's seven basic things in a business plan: an executive summary, a business description, a market analysis, funding requirements, financial impacts, organization management, sales strategy. So for two of those, I suggest we just use sort of boilerplate wording for these, because I don't think each use case is going to have their own separate organizational management sales strategy. funding and financial impacts I merged together to talk about basically cost savings. And then these, the markets may vary based on the use case, and the descriptions, of course, may vary as well. All right. So R5 Alto Cadence release, being a Cadence release, I've been on, and I'm on a number of project calls, platform project calls, and a lot of teams now are talking about what's going to be in El Alto, how will they use El Alto, how can they reduce debt, and for example, the SDC team this week kind of went over all of their JIRA tickets through a filter in JIRA, and they could see here's all the JIRAs that we have open, and so one of the things that I suggested Ophir would do is, you know, he can go into each one of those now and prioritize them, because as people create them, they kind of create them with their own priorities, but there's not a sort of unified view of what's high priority. So, but anyway, a lot of the people are are now starting to plan and look at the tickets for their platform components. I know Jimmy on the ANA call just before this one was also talking about that as well. And I'm sure, as we move forward, a lot of the platform projects will be working on that. One thing that did come up though on the modeling call on Monday and Tuesday, they were a little concerned that I had raised a point that if you look at the proposal, there's nothing mentioned about what's happening with modeling, and so I think we still need to go to the maybe TSC community or team and see, does this mean absolutely no modeling is done whatsoever in R5? Certainly you can. So one conversation that I was a part of is they said, well, you can model for the next release, of course, that makes sense. But the question is, like, would you hold off on all modeling? I think it'll probably be if the modeling doesn't impact any of the software currently being refactored or software that's being currently worked on, that's probably okay. but the TSC call always runs long, and I always have to hop on another call. But and Alo is going to bring that point up, I think. So I'm not sure if that happened. I'll have to find out. Okay. The platform topics are mostly our six topics, I think. So let me skip those for now. A lot of the use cases, because now they're moved to R6, we have some time. That's why I'm scheduling a number of sort of presentations in the interim in R5. some analysis we have now for use cases can happen now. So there's this extended period of time from essentially now to September where you can plan for what's in a release. I can also show really briefly here. 2 minutes left. Okay. So let me just show you really quick a presentation. I obviously won't be able to go into the details of this presentation, but I presented in the modeling call and have queued up for the architecture call a way of working between modeling and the use cases. So in the modeling team, they make high level requirements, they plan a model, they refine a model, they approve and freeze a model, and then the model is finalized. The use cases, you know, the people here working use cases go through proposals, definitions, design, development, and testing, which all of you are probably familiar with. And then architecture is a little bit more nebulous, but it goes through architecture definition where they work on this functional architecture. That architecture is approved, and and then the documentation is developed. And the point was, how do we get all these teams talking and working together, which the model team felt isn't necessarily happening right now. So, and you know, I attend multiple modeling calls a week, I attend multiple use case calls a week, and I attend the architecture call every week. And I can attest, you know, the Deng Hui doesn't doesn't attend the use case calls or the architecture call, and Stephen Terrell doesn't attend the modeling calls, nor does he attend any of these use case calls. So, it's kind of up to, it's kind of ad hoc right now. People who are working use cases individually go to these calls and try to stitch together these teams, and not necessarily very effectively. And obviously we know there's a ton of calls on ONAP a week, but the modeling team was concerned because they were starting to talk about some models that didn't have a use case yet. And then that sparked a whole discussion of, can we approve anything before there's an actual use case, and et cetera, et cetera. So I volunteered to at least start a discussion or come up with some slides of how the teams might work together better. There is kind of a, if you look in the release plan, there is very vaguely some points that I used in the slides here where it's saying something should happen when, but it's still, I think, not very well defined, and it's certainly not very coordinated yet. And I think that needs to improve as we move forward. So, okay, any questions on that? Okay, and maybe it's up to just Ala and Vimal and people to also pull in Stephen and Denghui and some of the other people working modeling and architecture to maybe have, we do kind of coordinate a little bit every 6 months in these developer forums, I suppose. But probably when we're actually starting to think about and define use cases there, I try to show when these teams should be involved in working together, and when they should be talking. So, okay. All right. So we've hit the end of the top of the hour. So thank you everybody for joining. I hope you found it useful. I thought the ANA demo was pretty neat. So I'll stop it here.